Today, I thought I'd speak a little bit about the world system in general. One of the things that you kind of come to understand about the world as you walk in the ways of God is just how the world as we know it is opposed to the world as God would have it. So much so, and I think this applies especially to those of us in the West, where so much of our attention, so much of our education, so much of our values come from the secular world, come from what might be spoken of as Babylon or Sodom or Egypt, basically the kingdom of darkness. There was once a tradition in early Christianity, sort of the kingdom of light versus the kingdom of darkness. You find this in the Didache. You find this in the Epistle of Barnabas, and to some extent also in the Shepherd of Hermas, and it's sort of in other places also. The gist of it basically is that you're supposed to walk around with kind of an awareness of both worlds. Jesus teaches us to be as wise as serpents, but as harmless as doves. That we should have some kind of a spiritual discernment, that we should be able to try the spirits to see if they are from God. We read in Revelation about the synagogue of Satan, how the Jewish synagogue or whatever were run by Satan, and how there were false apostles that had been tried and found to be false apostles. In other words, people had some way of discerning the false from the true. And it gets me to thinking about substance, you know. I've always sort of been a philosopher at heart. I was just as much a victim of the secular brainwashing machine that exists out there that tells you that the world is purely materialistic and follows purely natural, rational laws of order, which, of course, these things are objectively measurable and, experiments are repeatable and then those kinds of things. But to tell you that the world is purely materialistic, in other words, it starts out as matter and matter forms into something, and that something like consciousness emerges from non-consciousness, or something like love emerges from something like indifference or something, as if there were some way in which the way that we define ourselves as human, the way in which we think, could somehow come from something which has no ability to think, or the way in which we love could come from something that has no concept of any kind of feeling, much less love. It's funny. In the Gospel of Thomas, one of the more interesting statements that Jesus makes is just simply to be passers-by. And what's interesting about a statement like that is that it kind of is such a global statement. It's almost as if it's the most you can say in the fewest words to say that you are to be a passerby without giving you anything really to pin that on. In this world, in other words, everything is transient. Everything comes and it goes, and just as you receive, you also have to give up, up and up to and including your own self and your own body, because we are mortal beings, and everything that we are and everything that we have does pass away. And so the things that we are here for are the kinds of things that don't pass away, things that don't have maybe the material veneer or whatever of a material reality, but that something else grows up within yourself. Like, for example, if you look back on your life, if you have enough of a lifespan and are reflective enough to look back over your life and to take stock, if you will, of the things that went into you, what people said, and the experiences that you went through, and the thoughts that you had, and the sequences in which you did things within your life. You'll find that there is a lot that is there, and that maybe what is important in life is not so much all of these transient things, people that you like that come and go, even some of the more permanent fixtures in your life, like your family and your friends and everything, your careers or whatever. Eventually you go or they go. Even that is transient. But what remains would be the things that are beyond the material. See, one of the things that the world believes, one of the things that the world teaches, and one of the most backwards teachings that there is, that you can imagine, is basically existentialism. that somehow existence precedes essence. Meaning that when you look out into the world, then all of the things that you see, all of that complexity, merely stems from a material sort of chain of events that finds its way back over thousands of, millions of years and, billions of, light years or whatever, in terms of span and scope and time and whatnot. That somehow everything is traceable to some kind of explosion or some kind of just a sequence of events, that there was an explosion and that, atoms formed and, I don't know what all is involved in all that, but I mean the basic gist of it is that this happens and then that happens and then this happens and then that happens and you multiply, the countless galaxies by the countless, stars that are within those, galaxies by the thousands of, planets or whatever, the millions of billions or whatever of what, and by the time you get through taking everything into account, surely somewhere, sometime in all of that time and space and within all of that scope, there's got to be just by sheer chance alone, the right planet with the right conditions and the right star and the right configuration and the right proportions of gases or the right temperature range or the right this and the right that. And you just, eventually when you start thinking in terms of numbers and probabilities and those kinds of things, that gets you kind of caught up into this whole chain of events, this whole chain of causality. And I believe that when Jesus tells us to be passers-by and he says really nothing else, that that's so universal a statement, that is so broad and so completely sweeping, in a sense, that it really it borders on the sublime, because what it basically entails is the notion that you are so, your essence anyway, you are so removed from externals, that you really have nothing really holding you here. You're basically free to come and go as you please without any kind of attachments or responsibilities or whatever, and such a thing is almost unthinkable in the world in which we live. Now, naturally, Jesus was involved in things. I mean, he actually, obviously, he was a carpenter. He did things. He made, he obviously built or something, for a living. He taught, and I mean, the things that he did. I mean, he didn't just like sit down and navel gaze, like that was all he did. He did do works and everything, but in terms of, he was willing to lay down his life for what he believed in. He was willing to sacrifice himself for what he believed in, or for what he knew to be true, and for the sake of love, which leads me kind of to my next complaint about existentialism as we understand it. If existence precedes essence, in other words, you have a material reality before you have a soul, before you have a mind to think, before you have a heart to feel, before you have a spirit to know God and the higher orders of this realm, that somehow all that evolves from the bottom up, from particles, from energy that basically just goes in and around on itself, and is sort of the residual effect of a giant explosion some billions of years in the past. However, I believe that that notion is impossible in light of the fact that you would have to explain things like intelligence, that somehow intelligence arises from non-intelligence. Or that love, as we understand it, arises from some kind of indifference, some kind of unfeeling. I understand that ethologists and psychologists and sociologists can explain these things in terms of their survival value. That, for example, animals will tend to be tolerant of other animals of their own type, typically because it increases their survival value and for genetic purposes and whatnot. And then they have the rationales. But in the end, you have to imagine all of these processes and all of these mechanisms basically working blindly. To produce an animal, a creature, or a human being, which in their estimation really is just another animal, not even a superior animal, because there are animals that can see better than we can, hear better than we can, smell and feel and sense better than we can, and as proportion, jump higher or swim farther, or and it really, when you look at it in its totality, there's very little that humans can say that they are honestly better than the animals at, strangely. But with the higher order thinking. With the ability to do something creative with the knowledge that they have. I believe that people's creativity, coupled with their language skills and their social nature, that these are the basic key ingredients for civilization, and that human beings are a little bit like say termites or ants, in the way in which there is this division of labor, and there seem to be different inclinations between people, someone who may be born into say like a what we would call a primitive society, or a society where, we don't have modern medicine, might, practice some kind of folk medicine, or maybe be a witch doctor, or a like a shaman or something like that, that they do their own medicine or say their own way, but that people are born basically to be doctors or, spiritual, whatever. I mean, there are, leaders, civic, minded people or whatever, just from, that it just is inherent in people, and that kind of thing is just sort of distributed, naturally or whatever, and that has some kind of survival value. But it's just as well to say that love, for example, as it manifests itself in, let's say, the animal kingdom, human beings, animals, that love is something that is a higher order thing, and that intelligence, for example, is a higher order thing. Now, this is not something that you'll ever convince an atheist is true. Having been an atheist myself, and having come to terms with things, I guess the way I did sort of logically, I thought in terms of probability. What was the probability that what was happening in my life was merely chance? To me, it started to defy human logic, and started to, get me thinking that there must be something out there that is controlling the game, and that things were being presented to me in such a way where if I were truly logical and I were truly honest, because these are the kinds of things that I said to God. I said, if you could show me logically that you exist, if you could prove to me your existence, I would serve you in a heartbeat. And, there were little things that probably wouldn't be very translatable to other people, but they were personally meaningful to me, things that I couldn't explain. And probably the same sort of thing that's happened to each and every one of you. If you have some concept of, synchronicity or whatever, that things happen for a reason and all, you probably can relate. But in any case, the thing that really separates a believer in God from one who does not believe in God, I believe, is the notion that there are things that pre-exist reality and exist, material reality, of course, and that persist after the material veneer. In other words, and this is kind of borne out, like when you think of four dimensions, the length, width, height, plus the time. If you imagine a human's lifespan as being a dimension of time, then that human, first of all, prenatally is basically developing genetically, and that genetics is foreordained by this great plan. And that once that person is born, they're born in a sense into a second womb, no more the womb of the mother, but the womb of the world, if you will. And there's all of this development that takes place in this second womb of the material realm. But that once you were born again, really born for the second time, then your spiritual eyes open and your spiritual ears open. And you are no longer as attuned to the material world as you once were. You are no longer as attracted to the arguments or the logic or the... basically the whole reward and punishment system that exists in the world. You no longer seek to, to serve material ends. You become, in a sense, a passerby, someone who is in the world but not of the world, someone who walks among people who walk in darkness, with your own struggles, of course, to be sure, because there is someone who looks after your soul, there is someone who looks after your well-being, and a lot of what you're going through seems inexplicable, but the spiritual person recognizes what the non-spiritual person has a hard time recognizing, and that is that hardship and suffering, and to some extent, the suffering of injustice or the suffering of something which is unfair or just not right, that it creates an opportunity to grow spiritually and in terms of your patience and in terms of your forgiveness, which, given the choice between forgiving and not forgiving, or given the choice between reconciling yourself with the reality that you now face as opposed to living in regret of it, right? You can see where the one choice could lead to a stronger, better, more accepting person, and another choice, the other choice, to be negative, in other words, can lead you to spiral into hatred and bitterness and resentment. And I think that all of us have been angry and bitter and resentful ourselves about something in our lives, and come to realize later that, we wasted a lot of time and energy worrying about something, or being angry about something, or being too moved, I guess, by something to really be yourself, that you become something you really aren't, and that those kinds of things hold you back in terms of your spiritual growth, such that you really are no longer a passerby. You are attached and involved, and spiritually attached and involved. I mean, obviously the physical is less important. You got to do what you got to do to get by. That's that's something altogether different. I'm talking about spiritually. You don't want to be attached to this world. You don't want to value what this world values. You want to value what God values. And so, in a sense, to be a passerby is to be a passerby of this world and its values. You see, once you embrace the truth of God, then the truth of God will, of course, try you and test you and make sure, of course, that you're persistent and that you come back. It's not just going to give it to you. It may give you a little bit at first, but as time rolls on, you'll need to face testing. I mean, that's just part of the whole proving ground of reality. In a person who has come from that world of the secular, that world of contrivance, where people are living for what is man-made. You get that job. Well, somebody, made that job. Somebody provided that job. But it's something, in some way it's manufactured, in some ways it's artificial, in some ways it's contrived. It may be necessary in the sense that what you do serves some sort of public function or some sort of necessary function in society. But that's not really why you're here. These things are always a means to an end and not really an end in themselves, because everything in this world perishes and the lusts thereof perish along with it, as it is written. So naturally, nothing that is in this world has any permanence other than what you learned, what you gave, what you contributed, what you experienced, whether you learned from your mistakes, whether you grew from your spiritual trials and hardships, whether you learned to get over things like anger and bitterness and bad habits and basically self-destructive thinking, or thinking or acting that is destructive to other people, or any of those kinds of things that attach themselves to you spiritually and make their homes with you. If you allow them, and if you feed them, and if you give them enough of your energy and enough of your thoughts, they will cause you to, And again, because in the spiritual realm, in the realm of the spirit, you have to understand that there are all of these forces at play that are beyond the material veneer that you're looking at. You may think that what you're looking at is solid enough and real enough, but everything is arranged sort of supernaturally. In the same way that love is transcendent, it does not come from molecules, it does not come from explosions. You're free to believe that if you like, but to those of us who walk in the spirit, who have actually lived their life understanding that there is a path and that there is a way, and there is a trial and there is a testing, and also probably as importantly, at least as far as being a witness to other people anyhow, is the way in which you act and react differently from those other people in the world, and the way they act and the way they react to things, because you again are in the world but not of the world. You are living for the world to come. And by embodying that, at least as far as it is possible for you to walk, I believe God always meets you halfway, and sometimes then some. He may be trying and testing you, but most of the time, he's just asking you to take baby steps, just a little here, a little there, unless it's something that's really, really self-destructive or destructive to others, in which case you have to just make a clean break with it. But in any case, God is pulling us in his direction, but you got to keep taking steps in that direction. He will help you. It's as if you close your eyes and just trust that that next step is going to be there, because there are a lot of things there to pull you off of your game and to distract you, because again, the devil is our accuser. You see, everything that the devil puts in this world, in some sense, he has to define it or present it in such a way that you really should know better in order for that to have any weight with God. For example, if the devil just outright wrongs you or outright tricks you or something, he can't stand in front of God and say, oh, he, she, whoever should have known better. They knew better than to do that, see? So, like it says in the scriptures, right? To whom much is given, much is expected. Or, to those who, to know it is something is sin, to him it is sin. Well, see, he, she, whatever, they knew it was sin and they did it anyway. So, see, it's their fault. You got to punish them, right? And that leaves you open, of course, to more demonic, dominance. Oh, look, they're doing this now. Oh, look, they're doing this, again. They're doing this all, and it'll come to dominate you in the spirit. Now, a person who does not have spiritual insight, who is not a passerby, but who is involved in what this world teaches and what this world believes, and buys into the system and basically sells out to it in the process, they become blind to it. They become slaves to it, really. The world is basically make-believe. Yeah, it functions, it keeps you alive, there are a great many processes involved in keeping us all fed and, all of us driving around and, but it's easy also to forget that there once were simpler times. There once were indigenous people who walked this earth who didn't have plastic and didn't have gasoline and didn't have synthetic chemicals and who didn't destroy, the Gulf of Mexico or whatever. I mean, there was a time before all of this. And frankly, for people to think that human beings are capable of running this world, when you see what human beings are doing to this world, Revelation speaks about God taking vengeance on those who destroy the earth. And we are doing this with an absolute vengeance. Is it because we need food? Is it because we need clothing? Is it because we need shelter? What does the Bible say? It says that the wealth of the wicked is laid up for the just. It says that the meek shall inherit the earth. It says that we, at that time, will eat the flesh of kings and great people. All right? What does this mean? It means that we reap the benefits of all of this. You know, the world becomes ours eventually. Not as it is now, but as God would have it, right? Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, in earth as it is in heaven, right? Give us this day our daily bread, you know? Forgive us our sins as we forgive the sins of other people. Well, have you sinned? I have, right? How can I hold a sin against somebody else, you know, when I got so many, you know, that I need to account for? I certainly want to be, you know, forgiven, so I obviously have to forgive, right? You know, we have to change. The world is a wicked place. The world is a deceptive place. The world is there to make you into its own image. The devil thinks that he owns you. And in a way, he does. I can almost imagine what it must be like to have the accuser before you at all times and have to listen to every one of his accusations against mankind. Look at so-and-so today. Look at them 5 minutes later. 5 minutes later. Look, they're doing this. Look, they're doing that. Look at here. Look at there. Right? What are you going to do about it? Right? You said this. You said that. Well, let's do it. Right? You know, he's not your friend, you know. He's your enemy. He's sitting up there every moment of the day accusing you. He's like, if you do this, you watch. He'll do that. Right? Just like it says in Job. Right? You know, you take away his things, right? And he'll curse you, right? You take away his health. He'll curse you, right? And all this is going on behind the scenes, behind the images that you mistake for reality. Those things are props. They're sets. They're real enough, but everything is energy. Everything just goes round and round and round on itself, and something harmonizes all of this. You know, something is pulling on the strings of all this, causing it all to appear as it appears. But it is not as it appears. This did not precede the thing that controls it. There is something over the material realm. The material realm is reacting to the thing which is controlling it. And the sooner we come to realize this as a people, the sooner we can grow to accept the higher truths that are within the Bible. We have always subjugated the Bible to the fleshly level and have ignored the higher level meanings of it, the spiritual meanings of it. We have been all too eager to accept unbelievers into our congregation, to mollify and to pacify people who, you know, want things this way or that way, or want certain teachings avoided or other teachings, you know, emphasized or whatever. You know, all of these things are basically distortions. Everything in the Bible is supposed to be crystal clear and easily understood, but only to someone who worships God in spirit and in truth. And there are a great many obstacles that are laid before you on your journey to truth. And the only way to get past all of these things is literally to get past them, to get over them, to be a passerby. You have to lose your life in order to find it. You have to lose yourself in order to find yourself. You know, it's like Paul says and Ezra says, you know, that let him who sells be like one who will not have anything to sell, you know, to just let it all go, to just forget it. The kingdom of Babylon is not great. The kingdom of Babylon is a contrivance. It is a machine that is designed to deceive us and to deceive the world and to enslave us through that deception. But it is a deception. What do we know about Lucifer? What do we know about that deceiver? On that very last day, we shall all look narrowly upon him. We shall ask ourselves, is this the man that led us all astray, that led astray the whole world? What's surprising is what a massive undertaking Babylon has been. That the devil has to go to such enormous lengths in order to deceive us, in order to entrap us, in order to enslave us. In order to have an arena in which he can accuse us. And again, remember when the flood came, this was at the time when men's thoughts were evil. All evil, all the time. You know, I'm not that old. I was born in 1970. And I can remember as a child, you know, to me when I watched television or when I listened to music or whatever, you know, a lot of it seemed kind of innocent to me. A lot of it seemed kind of innocuous to me, you know. It all seemed very mellow and very, you know, happy and chipper. It to me, anyway, there weren't so many, you know, in terms of pop culture, anyway. I didn't see it as something evil and dark and threatening. I realized there was some of that out there, but that, you know, growing up in that culture, we weren't that exposed to it, you know, or at least I wasn't where I grew up. All we had was network TV, you know, that was it. And, you know, so I wasn't really, you know, to me, the world just, you know, has gotten to the point where it doesn't even surprise me anymore. It just seems like everything I see is pulling people towards things that God expressly does not like. It's amazing how much I have seen angel imagery, fallen angel imagery, pervading our pop culture. You know, all of this is straight out of Genesis. All of this is straight out of the Book of Enoch. It's as if you're watching these days, just as it was in the days of Noah, people marrying and giving in marriage. It's just as if you're seeing this happen before your eyes. That this generation is going to become so consumed with evil that it will become consummate evil. In other words, judgment is impending. And seeing that judgment is impending, if you see that, I hope you see that, if you see that judgment is impending, you will begin to see just how important it is that we accuse the accuser, that we call out to God, even as the widow came to the unjust judge, and just continue to plead our cause with him. I think that we can count on him to be fair. I think that we can count on him to be responsible. I think that we can count on him to be a God of his word, you know, and let the evil be evil still, you know, let the wicked be wicked, let the good be good, let the holy be holy, you know, let the chips fall where they may. But above all, give Babylon back to Babylon. Just give it back to her. Give it back. Give her double what she gave you. It's laid up for us. It's not for them. They perish. Their day is over. We are the ones who inherit the earth. But we can only inherit the earth when we accept God in meekness.